Welcome to the Motoring Podcast, your weekly discussion of motoring news. This is episode 182 on Tuesday, the 29th of May, 2018. Hello, I'm Alan.
And I'm not Andrew, I'm Richard. This week, we'll be talking about bugs in Beamers, the return of the milk float, and why the Allegro isn't all aggro, honest.
Yeah, well, that's what you tell us anyway. Should we start off with some follow-up?
Yep.
So, this is a classic Andrew story, actually, which is why we're just going to zip across it relatively quickly. In fact, most of the follow-up are Andrew stories, so that's why we're zipping through them. Yes, BMW, a series of bugs in the entertainment system mean that people from Tencent and their Keen Security Lab have found a whole load of ways that you can actually get into, and you can actually do things to BMW communication systems. Now, I know that sounds really, really generic and really, really vague, and as if I haven't actually read the article. But what they're doing is they have already started going through the whole sequence with BMW to report these. And they're being kind of sketchy and kind of vague on stuff until they know that there's a fix issued, so that people don't go running around with it. I think 4 out of the 12, if I remember rightly, I have read it, I promise. A number of them do actually require access to the CAN bus and physically something plugged in to actually make stuff happen. In there, so that's much, much harder to do. And these were also China only models in some cases, stuff like the 525 Li, which we don't get here. There was something else key that I was going to mention about this. Oh yes, the operating system that all this runs on is something called QNX. If you ever wonder what happened to BlackBerry, the maker of indestructible is actually what I'm trying to say. Indestructible, indescribably hard to use mobile devices with actual buttons. Then this is what they're doing these days, is the QNX system that runs not just BMWs, but many other cars.
I love how this article on the Register has the 7 CVE ID numbers. You're a total geek, you can reel all those off.
I'm pleased to say I'm not. I am not.
And it also says that they were, some of them were in i3s, X1, 730 LIs, the 525 LI, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
And BMW models which were equipped with this module produced from the year 2012.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's all been reported, and it's all going through and being and hopefully being sorted in there. So this is the result of stuff being passed across to BMW rather than look, we've found all these things and everyone ignored us.
And this one is separate issue from the issue that you've been talked about the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. Should we move on?
Mm-hmm.
Hamburg, what are the Hamburgers up to?
They're going to become, well, Hamburg will become the first German city to ban diesel cars from the 31st of May.
Which is Thursday.
Thursday, yes. Yes. To improve air quality and to set a template for other urban areas in the country.
Have you not noticed, though, how token this is? Because the way it's all being announced, it makes it sound like Hamburg, whole of central Hamburg, no more diesels that are that are Euro 5 and older.
Yeah.
But it's actually about a mile, was it 1.6 kilometers? Yeah, a mile.
Yeah.
Of Stressmannstrasse,
yeah. We'll be close to older diesel trucks, while a 580-meter stretch of Max Brauer Alley.
Yeah,
barred to diesel cars of Euro 5 standard and older. Yeah, so it's It's very small stretches of road.
It is. And do you know what's on those roads? This is the bit that makes it so incredibly token. It's not just that. That's where the measurement devices are that measure the nitrogen dioxide levels.
Okay.
Oh. Okay. So yes, they are definitely reducing nitrogen dioxide levels and particulate levels exactly where the European Commission's readers are. So that should get it out of the top bit. It's a bit ridiculous. It's just whenever this was first mentioned, everybody went, "Whoa, wait a minute! This is huge." You know, the cities will be able to dictate, you know, what types of vehicle can get in and out, and that's going to be make big differences in Germany. You know, and should have ongoing repercussions. And then this happens. This is the first place it's happened, and it's such a tiny little T junction in the middle of the city, which is actually affected. It's just a bit. I don't know. It's a bit like the whole of Dieselgate, to be honest, isn't it? By the letter of the law, it is just fine.
Yeah,
but you know, it's not really doing anything.
Well, it reminds me of a similar, well, not a similar. There's talk about where I live. They're going to, well, there's talk of a trial of rerouting the buses, closing some of the road into the main city centre, making it bus lane only at peak times during the day, diverting traffic. Partly down our road and partly down the road that's at the back of us, which is the faster road.
Right.
Which is just moving the pollution from one area to another, because that road itself gets really busy and really polluted. So, they're going to take it away from the other road, but they're going to pile it on in the second road, which makes no sense. But anyway, that's a separate story.
That's what I mean. You know, at work and stuff, we say to mess something up takes government. To really, really mess it up takes local government.
Yes,
I think that's what we're going to see, certainly in the shortish term anyway. And another side story, European Commissioner Elisabetta Bańkowska, I should have taken a longer run up at that one, has branded diesel cars a technology of the past and predicted that they will completely disappear in the near future.
Really?
To be honest, there's not really any substance behind that. I actually think it's just a commissioner trying to get some sound bites, which she has succeeded in doing. So well done.
Indeed.
Jolly good. Something that probably will make a difference, though, to inner city pollution is Zipcar.
Mm-hmm.
So Zipcar, in case people don't know, I'm just making sure I'm not stealing your story. That's okay. Zipcar, in case people don't know, is a car club. And they have a load of cars that you can go along if you've got the pass and you're registered and everything, and you can use and pay for by the minute or the hour or whatever. And they're going to start in central London, introducing 300 e-Golfs, so electric Golfs, in there. They already run GTEs, which are plug-in hybrids.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you. They already run a limited fleet of GTEs, but they'll be adding to those with those 300. First 100 should arrive by the end of July. I always think EVs are absolutely perfect for car sharing schemes.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. And I think it's going to be the biggest fleet of its kind, I think.
Is it? Because I always think, when I think of the car schemes, the one that I always think of are the Autolibes in Paris.
Yes, which do look quite amusing, how sometimes they're quite bashed up and quite not pristine, shall we say.
Well, they've had to put up with Parisian drivers, haven't they? It's
yeah.
that they even look that manky or unmanky, or not as manky as they possibly could do, is quite impressive.
The story we're talking about, it's not on the story that we've got open, but I did see something about the size. It might be on the original press release, because that only came in quite late tonight, didn't it? So
yes, we've been caught out slightly, folks, by bank holidayness. So all the press releases that are normally released on a Tuesday morning, having saved up from like Friday lunchtime, which is why we record the show on a Tuesday night, by the way, didn't get out. And, you know, they were only written today and then didn't get out until 5 o'clock. And I expect them to be a barrage of them tomorrow morning, you know, as the show goes out.
But yeah, I think Zipcar's got previous Hemingway because of the GTEs. And also, I think last July they bought, I can't remember exactly how many they added a load of Polos to their fleet as well. So it's clearly partly a Volkswagen thing as well.
Yeah, there is a joke that it's Zipwagen as well. I noticed that in something else I was reading and looking up earlier on. They also do vans as well, and they've moved away from diesel transporters, and they've got petrol powered transporters.
Yes, we were in town very recently, and we did actually see two Zipcar transporters. Yeah, but I hadn't made the connection that they weren't diesel.
No, because I spotted it, because there was one just around the corner from an office I was working in, and I spotted that and tweeted it, and then they got back and said, well, we're doing it because there's fewer particulates and less nitrogen oxides. I mean, there's more CO2, of course, but not,
of course, yeah.
So they're doing it right the way across. So just, I would imagine that as soon as they can get electric transporters, that would be a place that they would be rolled out.
Yeah, it's a step in the right direction, though, and it's an interesting.
In case people haven't twigged, the reason EVs are fantastic for these car clubs is because the biggest issue with car club cars is refueling them. And of course, here, every time people essentially return the car, they are plugging it into the fuel.
Yes.
So they can just sit. When they're not being used, they're sitting there charging themselves quite happily. And so anytime anyone comes along, then they instantly, you know, they should always get a full charge in their vehicle. So it stops Zipcar having to get people going out, topping cars up, trusting that people will actually put fuel in before returning them, all these kinds of things.
And if you don't have to, if you live in London and don't want to or have to own a car, then it's the perfect thing for nipping across the city and going slightly further afield. The e-Golf is 186 mile range, I think.
Something like that. I wonder how it'll work outside of London, if you'll be able to use it on a Polar or an Ecotricity type charger.
Don't know.
No, but if I lived in the middle of London, I would be a member of one of those clubs.
Yes.
The way to do it.
Yes.
Cool. Yeah, but there's lots of electric stuff tonight.
I don't know why.
Well, no, I don't know why. It just happens to be that there's lots of electric stuff tonight. But this was one from your current employer, isn't it? Next one.
I say it's a very familiar website. Yes, from greenfleet.net. The Milk and More company are buying 200 electric street scooters, even, which are the all-electric kind of small transporter vehicle that were made by Deutsche Post subsidiary Street Scooter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they're 200, and they're replacing 200 electric milk floats that they've currently got. Really? But they're not the little tiny ones, surely, that were.
I don't know. I'd missed that bit. Because I just assumed that they'd be replacing diesel vans, really.
Yeah. Oh, well, actually, it does say they are, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And with the existing 200 electric boats, there you go.
Yeah, it's that whole reading thing. Neither of us are very good at that. Yeah. We had a stressful time starting this, okay?
So a third of their fleet will now be all electric, which is good.
Yeah.
because a lot of those will be in urban areas too. So,
so Milk and Moor is part of Muller and what is it? Yeah, it's part of Muller and all that group that would bought out Wiseman and all this stuff. So it is. You might not have heard of it, but it is actually part of a really big company. Did you see? There's an interesting thing in here that actually the street scooters are all going to be left-hand drive. It might not be here. It might be somewhere else. They're actually all going to be left-hand drive. They're not doing right-hand drive ones. And the reason is, and I actually agree with this, is that it makes it much, much easier for the delivery person because they're getting out on the side of the curb every time.
Yes. Yes, yes, that makes sense.
And they're handy for that. So they can just step out and that's it. It's probably less dangerous to have that than to have right-hand drive when people in the early morning gloom are getting in and out of a vehicle.
Mm. And these have been around for a couple of years now, haven't they, these street scooters there?
Yeah, well, the reason they're produced by Deutsche Post is, of course, Deutsche Post owns DHL, or is a large shareholder in DHL. And that's what they were originally developed for, were postal deliveries in Germany.
Yes, yes, that's right.
Just going back to the wrong-hand drive thing, by the way, all the post vans in Sweden are all right-hand drive for exactly the same reasons as this.
So
everything else is left-hand drive, and then you see Swedish post office vans, and they're righties. You wonder what happens to them. I wonder if they import them over here or if they're just so knackered, they just crush them.
So was it Sweden who used to drive on the right?
They did, yeah. Yeah.
And it was like a switch overnight, wasn't it?
1960s, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was. Now, one of the guys I work with when I'm over there was talking about that the other week, and I can't remember what he was saying. He said it was just one of those things where just they closed the whole place down because you could back then, and then the next morning it was all driving on the other side. Now, it took a while for people to get the hang of it, but everyone was so paranoid about it that in actual fact the accident rate went down because people were having to concentrate on their driving a bit more.
Maybe there's a hint there for road safety.
Well, just keep swapping back and forth.
Maybe not.
Not the easiest one these days with entry and exit ramps and all that.
But that's good news too. That's more EVs out there and being seen. So,
yeah, and it's did we say what the range was?
Up to 75 miles.
Up to 75 miles, which everybody's going to go, oh, that's not much. But you're going out, you're doing a loop of up to 75 miles, and then you're plugging in again, ready for the next day.
And Milk and Moor reckons that it's already seen a 90% reduction on operational fuel costs in the first month against the outgoing diesels.
Well, you would do, yeah. Yeah, it makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah.
And the servicing will be less.
Yes.
And there's just fewer to go wrong because you're giving these out to fleet people, and people who are driving fleet vans and stuff are not normally the most, or people when they are driving fleet vans are not normally as careful as if it's their own vehicle.
Yes, yes, that's probably the right word to use.
That's pretty fair, yeah.
Yeah. Good.
Right. I quite like that story. I was all ready for that one. Last but not least, before we get to the guilt minute. Now, I was wringing my hands as to whether we should talk about this, to be perfectly honest, because it's a Tesla story.
So Andrew will be donning his tinfoil hat now
Jumped on that. Yeah, I'll be doing it in sympathy. It's got to that stage on a Tuesday evening where he'll just put it on anyhow. I mean, let's go through this quite quickly because there is, as ever, so much speculation around this. Because this was a Tesla Model 3 that a chap called Yu Zhu, I imagine. My pronunciation is appalling. I'm so
That's
sorry.
More or less how it's spelled here, so yes.
Yes. It's a relief. Who is California-based, owns a Model 3, well, most of a Model 3, and took it on a road trip A road trip that so far in the last 6 months have covered 25 countries and around 24,000 miles.
Wow.
Hmm. Quite impressive. So he was driving in Greece just before weekend, 25th. Yeah, just for the weekend. Start the weekend there. Claims he had autopilot engaged, sitting about 75 miles an hour. I have no idea if that's within the speed limit in Greece. And then it suddenly veered right towards a highway exit, ended up in the barriers. And as I say, he now has most of a Tesla Model 3. He's okay, which is the important bit in all of this, really. But the car is not. Unfortunately, he only had third-party insurance as well, which is not really ideal either.
It's funny. It does say that he... Well, this story says he admits having one hand on the wheel at the time, mm-hmm. not paying full attention on the road. It also says he attempted to correct the steering when the front left of the car crashed into the barrier.
Now, I find another link which took me to Reddit. Now, I very rarely go near Reddit.
Mm.
But somebody there had pointed out that earlier last week he'd said that there was a ton of noise coming from the suspension.
Right. Oh, yes.
With all sorts of noises. So there is, you know, whilst autopilot was engaged, there is the possibility that it might not have been autopilot that failed. It might have been something suspension related.
Yeah.
So it's just worth mentioning that. Lots of stuff going on around this story, not least because when the Model 3 was being launched, that Lord Elon of Musk declared that by the end of 2017, there would, you know, the Model 3 would be being fully supported across North America, Europe, and Asia Pacific. Also, the fact that Tesla's about to open up an engineering research center in Greece as well. And they've come back and said, actually, we have no support at all in Greece. And so everybody's going, but, you know, it was promised by the end of 2017. It's now the middle of 2018. And you're telling me there's no support whatsoever in Europe at all for this. So that's not going down brilliantly well. But I think Tesla has plenty of other challenges on its plate right at the minute.
Well, as we said, at least, well, there's so much speculation. And if you go on that Reddit page, goodness me, some of the comments on there.
Ah, you see, this is why I don't normally read Reddit.
Some of them are quite shocking. Yeah,
it is Reddit. It's one of the armpits of the internet, as far as I'm.
Even worse than YouTube comments. Goodness me.
Oh, nothing's worse than a YouTube comment. Honestly, there is nothing worse than a YouTube comment. The silliest thing in the world is a YouTube comment. So
No, at least this Model 3 was actually out on the road driving. And it was actually,
It had been made. It had actually got as far from being made. It had been through whatever remediation was required and then had actually, allegedly, made it as far as an actual owner.
Mm.
Which is quite something.
Yes. But yes, I don't think we're going to know quite what happened to that, but it looks a bit of a mess in the pictures.
Yeah. Well, it did hit that barrier. So let's just see. I mean, it's going to be, I don't know. It's not so bad, I guess, to get it back to the US. You can stick it in a container from a port, and it's not going to cost too much. Honestly, you'd probably cost as much to get it from Greece to the US with a bit of a wait as it will do from wherever it is to actually get to the port and the container that it needs to go in. Yeah, I'm sure if there's any more on that, then we'll let you know. It was the thing everyone was talking about at the start of the weekend. So it was one of those worth mentioning.
Mm-hmm.
As well as that, it was no Andrew to go absolutely nuts at the thought of Tesla.
Should have gone more nuts.
Yeah. No, you shouldn't. No, you shouldn't. You don't get almost sweary enough.
No. No.
Not quite. Anyway, it's that point in the show, about halfway through, where we ask this simple question: Do you think what we do is worth a small amount of your cash? Who did? Why did I let him write this? If you do, and of course you do, then please don't hesitate to head to motoringpodcast.com, hit the orange Become a Patron button on the front page, and drop us a couple of dollars, for it is an American site, every month. Any contribution like that is hugely appreciated. Helps us pay for hosting, helps us pay for some of the other bits and bobs, and hopefully if we get enough, then of course to do things like road trips and other fun stuff like that. If you're already a patron, then thank you very much. It really is appreciated, and hopefully you like what you're getting as a result. We know that not everyone has the ability to do this, so please don't forget to like, rate, and leave feedback via the podcast playing platform of your choice. If you've done that, then that's great. Telling a friend is even better as well. Yeah, that's just about that. That's my moment of guilt for the week, I think. One last bit before Richard and I chat about some of the cars we've driven recently, and that's that. You might have noticed a tweet going out from Citroën's WRC team over the weekend, explained that they were basically sacking Chris Meek and his co-driver. They followed it up with a bit of an explanation as well, just saying that he had to let him go because he just kept on making huge mistakes when there was really no pressure and no need to, in their opinion. Of course. So yeah, Chris Meek is out of a WRC for the time being. I'm now trying to work out who it is that's replaced him.
I don't know, because you've got Craig Breen, you've got Mickelson was Hyundai, wasn't he?
So yes.
It wouldn't be him. I've not been following Mick this year.
Well, neither have I. Well, I haven't been,
I was quite shocked by this though when I saw it, because Meek has been quite a popular driver. He hasn't won, I don't think he's won a great deal.
No, it's more a case of watching it to see how well he's doing and then trying to guess which stage he'll be out on.
Yeah. I mean, I think I read a tweet this week. I think it was Richard Meaden who said that you sometimes need people like Meek in it. You know, the guys who will take risks and will do all those sorts of things. You know, he was a protege of McRae, and you know, all those sorts of things. And it was just I was just quite surprised, because he's still one of the top drivers in the sport. So
after seeing. So I was what you were saying there, that really, you know, he brings a certain amount of spectacle to it all, which is really what rally fans crave, isn't it?
But if you do see, you and Andrew were talking last week about the picture of the C3, and if you, you know, seeing it now again in front of me, it's shocking that anyone actually got out.
Yeah, it is. It really is. Yeah. Just how mangled the front of it was there. I mean, I don't know how much cutting they've had to do by the point that, you know, the picture was taken.
No.
So you never know if that's made it worse. But yeah, I mean, they said it did exactly what it was meant to do and absorbed as much of it as much of the impact as possible. But that ain't a car that's going to drive very far again.
No.
It's a goner.
No. Yeah.
Anyhow. That was Motorsport Corner for this week. There wasn't any Formula E this weekend. It's all been quite quiet. So Monaco Grand Prix, which I'm told was a fantastic way to spend 90 minutes snoozing in your chair.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I don't. Judging by the grumbling, it's not going to go down in history as one of the most exciting races that's ever happened. But well done, Daniel Ricciardo.
There you go. And there was only on Twitter I was following it. There was the first round of the World Rallycross Championship at Silverstone.
Yeah.
Weekend just gone. as part of the big Speed Machine festival that they've cranking up. But that looked quite good. But not having seen the track in person, I don't know if it's...
No, I have no idea, to be perfectly honest. I don't know. I only knew it was on Saturday. I think, like yourself, Ernest, really spotted it on the Twitters.
Yes.
I was mucking around and wasting time and not doing what I was meant to be doing. Story of my life. Anyway, you and I, actually, this is the second time we've spoken in less than a week, which is
unheard
of.
I know. Well, I can see you, but you can't see me, sadly. But anyway.
Well, that's true.
It's the same time I've seen you in a week, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So we were at the Society of Motor Manufacturers and Traders, the SMMT Drive Day at Millbrook last Thursday, along with a fair chunk of the British motoring press, I'd say.
Yeah, probably the world and his wife, or Roy Lanchester and his wives.
Well, only if they it's only if they'd filled out the appropriate security things. And
yes.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, the pair of us, we both drove. I think I drove more than you. I think I counted up.
Yeah.
I drove a ridiculous number of vehicles.
I'm a bit rubbish. I obviously don't do it well enough because I only drove, I think, 5 cars and had a passenger ride in 1. So
my worry is that I actually am not doing it properly either, because I go to this. So this is the 3rd year I've been. And the 1st year I just did too much, because that's what you do. The 1st year you go. And then last year I saw, right, I'm not going to do as much. I'm going to speak to as many people as possible. And it's not really about driving the cars. It's about speaking to people. Which is, yeah. The trouble was, I managed to speak to lots of people this year, and I spoke to them, and then they said, "So, what would you like to drive?" And I can't. And it's like turning down a drink, turning around a cup of coffee somewhere. You can't really do it and go, "Well, actually, I'm not really interested." I mean, I did it at Mazda, to be honest, because not that I say use those words. It's not that I wasn't interested. It's that I'd driven pretty much everything. So yeah, but I tried to balance. I think I got 10 on the passenger drive.
Gosh, that's good. I think.
Good. I was shattered. yeah. So I'd driven lots of stuff. But not for very long. I think I was probably out in each car less time than you were out in yours, because I'd go and I did one of the hill route and come back normally. Or if I really like, there was only one car that I did 2 of the hill route, plus the city route as well, because I just wanted a little bit more time. But yeah, normally I'd go do one of the hill route and try not to do anything fancy, because I've just tried to do video and all sorts of stuff in the past. And frankly, 90% of it has been complete rubbish and never seen the light of day again. It's taking up megabytes on my hard drive, and that's it. You're never going to see it.
No, and you don't really want to crash a car on the hill route either.
There are two aspects. One is that you're only driving it on the hill route, so it's not really a very rounded test.
No. You know,
it's a good way to get a flavor.
Test in inverted commas, yes.
Yeah,
drive.
It's like going along to a beer festival or to a food festival, right? And just having a little tiny thimble of beer or a teaspoonful of whatever it is that anyone's showing off. That's the equivalent. It's like the car equivalent of a food festival, I think. Yes.
Yes.
You've got to be a special type of person to write many thousands of words of full, you know, test of a vehicle based on what you do there.
Apparently people do, but I wouldn't personally, but anyway.
No, well, there are many different, everyone's different, and we all do things in different ways.
Indeed.
Yes. Indeed. No, I wouldn't do it either. So we just sort of picked out 3 kind of categories. I just picked out 3 kind of categories at random to throw at Rich. So first one, Rich, of the cars that you were in and you drove, what What was the most surprising?
Well, I'm not sure why, but it all kind of aligned, and it was kind of like a hot hatch type thing for me, because A, that's my favorite type of car.
Mm-hmm.
Even though mine's not the sharpest thing in the box, but anyway. And there were three new ones, that one I'd driven before and two I hadn't. And I drove it, then they were all I think I said on Twitter, they were all fun in their own individual way. I drove the Up GTI mm-hmm. first of the three, which yeah, I'd also driven
to that
in,
one.
Which I'd driven in a Scari a few weeks ago. I went on a Volkswagen GTI, which even for me as a fanboy was quite a nice day. Where you drove the Polo GTI, the Golf GTI, and the Up GTI around a Scari and around the race nearby. So that was good.
But I wanted some more really
time with it on, you know, in the UK, because I haven't driven a UK spec car. Mm-hmm. But that was fun. Then the guys driving with, we said that we'd also drive the Swift Sport straight afterwards for comparison, mm-hmm. because he'd just come back from the press launch of it and said it was really, really good. So we should try that after the Up.
Uh-huh.
And then before, I think that's when I then saw you, or yeah. not long before, and then I drove the car that you've currently got,
mm-hmm.
The Mad Rabid Yaris.
It's a pretty good description, yeah, I'll give you that.
Which again was fun in its own way, but I think the most surprising one of those three was the Swift, and I think I read something that you'd already said that you hadn't driven the previous two.
No, that's true. I hadn't driven the previous two.
So this was I popped my Swift Sport Cherry with this one, and it was just brilliant. Really, really good. It felt really grippy, and it had nice sharp turning.
And it was so light. Everything about it was so light. That's what I found. Because, I mean, you drove the GRM in. Everything in GRM is really quite heavy.
Mm.
The clutch is super heavy. The steering's quite heavy. Even the gear shift is decent, but still a bit heavy. But the Swift, everything was so effortless. I mean, it's not as utterly rapid as the GRM, no. But but everything was so nice. It was just, it just felt so right and light. And I only did one lap. I almost did a second lap of the hill route in the Swift Sport, and I didn't, because I thought, you know, if I do this again, I'm going to get in trouble with the marshals, because I was having so much fun, and I was so far within its capabilities.
Yeah.
I really liked it.
Oh, I did too. But yeah, it surprised me the most. I mean, it's the first one that has a turbo. The other two were naturally aspirated, but
mm-hmm.
and it's only 140 horsepower. But as you say, it's so light that you don't miss massive horsepower or anything. So, but no, it was the most surprising car, certainly of the day for me, mm-hmm. of the five that I drive. Although you had the best color.
People saw it on Instagram, I had the sunshine yellow one. Can't even accuse it of being that kind of primrosy mini color. I mean, it's yellow.
Yeah, it's very yellow.
Incredibly yellow. But yeah. I don't know, I'd choose it myself, but it looks great at this time of year.
Yeah.
Really does. Did you have the blue one or the burgundy one?
Blue one.
The blue one's nice. Yeah. I like the blue and the burgundy, to be honest. Those are the colours I would probably choose if I were to have.
It was funny, when we got there, you could see the pair of yellow cars driving around because they were so bright.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you wouldn't need to put sort of high-vis decals on them if you were using one as a motorway maintenance car. You know,
it's
that kind of yellow. What was my favorite? I'm sitting here flicking through. Or my most surprising. Sure, mine was, because I had to stop myself driving hot hatches as well. I mean, I didn't obviously take out the GRMN because I've done a mile or two in those already.
Well, you were tempted though, but then you said that it might spoil, or there might be something that's slightly different about that one that your one.
Yeah,
and spoil, that, or other way around.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was kind of it. That and the fact that once again I was worried I'd get in trouble on the hill route. But actually, my most surprising, I'm down to two, bizarrely. I might as well run through what my justifications are. So one of them is the Mini Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
Just Mini Cooper, not a Mini Cooper S or a John Cooper Works. I say just a Mini Cooper. It still had £6,500 worth of extras on it. But it was a Mini Cooper. Because I always forget how good those are to drive. And so that always surprises me. Anytime that's only really the second time I've driven one. But just how original Mini feeling it is to drive, apart mm-hmm. from the fact that the original Isigonus Mini, I mean, mm-hmm. Apart from the fact that, of course, the steering wheel's not like a bus.
Yes.
In those. And the other one that really surprised me was the Ford, I believe it's pronounced Echo Sport, not Eco Sport.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The little
SUV,
sort of SUV thingy. Mm-hmm. So I drove an ST line, one of those.
Mm-hmm.
With the 1 liter manual. And
that's EcoBoost, is it?
EcoBoost, yeah. So it's an Echo Sport with an EcoBoost engine.
Okay.
And I really quite liked it. I actually thought, because on these days you don't go around and you don't go choosing cars that you think are going to be rubbish. That's a waste of everybody's time and effort.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been curious about it. I've always been slightly sad since they took the spare wheel off the back and stopped it looking like a penny racer.
Okay, yeah.
But I really quite liked it. I mean, this one was fairly loaded with options, being a press car.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever I got back and I looked at the spec sheet, I was like, okay, so the leather's not standard and the privacy glass isn't standard. But the actual car itself was really quite nice to drive. And even around the hill route, which is where you'd expect it to be completely and totally out of its depth.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty game for it, to be honest. And I really quite liked it. I've realized I've just missed one off my list here as I scroll through. So that to me was the big surprise.
Okay.
Of the day. I don't necessarily want it, but I was really surprised by just how competent it was and just mm-hmm. how, I quite liked it.
Okay. So what's the one you take home then?
Favorite.
Yeah.
There's no question on that one, I'm afraid. I think I've become slightly obsessed by it. The Lexus LC500.
It did make a nice noise.
It made an awesome noise and it looks so good. And it
yeah, that was quite surprising too, actually. In terms of the most surprising look, that would be that, because in photos I've not been keen.
It doesn't work in photos.
No, but when you see one in the real world, you know, it's nice how the back of the roof slopes down to a point and is kind of just floating there. And it does look really good in the real world.
It has amazing hips.
Yeah, and the custard yellow of that one that was there was a lovely colour. Again, yellow. It's always... Yeah.
Well, there was the custard one and there was a white one as well. And I drove the white one with the red, the sort of burgundy interior.
I think that's the one we drove as well, actually.
Yeah, I think it was the same one. Yeah. And it was really nice.
Mm.
I could live with that. I'm not sure quite what the fuel consumption was. I didn't actually check. Especially on that one that I'd been lapping all day with us all list making the gearbox bang through on Sport Plus mode. Mm. Sounding like a rifle. So 10-speed automatic gearbox in that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, that was it. That was my absolute one I'd take home.
Okay. Okay. I think again mine would probably be the Swift, I think.
Mm-hmm. I was close on that. That's close to choosing that, yeah.
Which is quite surprising considering the Up was there, but I think the Up is a bowl of laughs and it is a giggle and just the noise it makes is fantastic, whether it's fake or not.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still, I don't think it's quite GTI enough. And I know that's coming from someone who's got an 18-year-old Polo that's not.
I'm really shocked at you saying this, to be honest. I'm genuinely shocked.
But the Swift just felt more dialed in and more enthusiast, maybe. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, the Up had a nicer, probably a nicer interior, mostly. But the way the Swift drove, it just drove really, really nicely.
Yeah, no, I really liked it. And people are saying that it's not as good as the Fiesta ST. So the ST must be something quite amazing.
Yeah, I've heard it's quite amazing. I've not driven one.
No.
Not the new one anyway, so.
I've not driven the old one either.
Haven't you?
Nope.
That one's good. But yes, that was, yeah, I think that would be the one. The Yaris, I did like the Yaris, but I don't know if I could live with one every day. I think I said to you on the day itself, it was.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, it was quite hardcore. And especially that clutch, it was so springy and so heavy.
Yeah, the clutch is the thing that really does it. I hop from GRMN into my friend and I's, because he'll call me out on that one, 51 plate T-Sport.
Mm.
And it's as if there is no clutch.
Yeah.
In fact, the first time I made the jump between the two of them, it was like, is this connected? Has something gone wrong here? And no, it was fine. It's just that light compared to one that's so heavy.
Mm.
And you just don't expect it from a tiny
car. Yeah, I'm so pleased that Toyota has done it, because,
yeah.
Well, it's just nice that it has.
It's just a bit bonkers.
Yeah, I mean, I've never driven the, I guess, Polo equivalent from 3 or 4 years ago that was, I think, much more common. It's only 3,500 units as opposed to 400.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that had a 220 horsepower engine and stuff, but I've never driven it, so I don't actually know what it's like. But I think the Yaris is still more hardcore.
Wow. Okay.
And it's still, you know, because of the bespoke dampers and everything else. And wasn't keen on the black wheels, but I don't think I'm keen on black wheels per se anyway.
So. I'm not, to be honest. I could take or leave black wheels. In fact, I think that it's going to get a different set for winter, and they're not going to be black.
Mm. But as a thing, as a... Whoa, that's still the Yaris. It was good.
But I haven't paid him to say any of this. I just want to make that completely clear. That he's saying this completely off his own bat and without prompting on notes.
I think it's so away from what the stereotypical Yaris image is, that you can only really like it even just a little bit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I agree.
But I'm just not sure I could like it enough on a daily basis, unless you had something else as well.
Yeah, okay, enough of that, because that's my sensible car.
Well, I asked you about the airport run, didn't I? And you said it's fine.
It is actually fine on the airport run, yeah. You get to and from the airport incredibly quickly, and it's not that noisy. So it's...
No.
Mm-hmm. Which is not bad.
Cool.
Anything else you drove that you want to talk about?
I drove a Polo, unsurprisingly. That's just Polo. That's what Polos do. It's fine. I
tried to get a shot in the Polo, by the way, but it was out. Somebody well known had pinched it in front of me.
Oh, and the 1 liter engine is very good. And it's so, the interior is so much of a step up from, I think, the last one. Bar the door cars. The door cars are a little bit scratchy plastic, but. But the rest of it, although that one there, that was a Beats, which has the nicer, lighter coloured interior, which you don't notice it quite so much in.
All right.
But the new engine's really nice. But yeah, I just wanted to get some more time with one because I've got something to write, so that was a good time to try one. But the only other car I went out in was was Malcolm Bobbitt, who is a member of the Northern Group of Motoring Writers. It was his Citroen TCV. That was on the Citroen stand.
Mm-hmm.
I did see a couple of people driving it with him passengering, but I was passengered in it
It depended who you were and how well he knew you, I think.
And I think if you'd driven a 2TCV before, which I haven't done, but it was just nice to get the experience of actually being in one, and it's kind of everything you think a 2TCV would be like, I think.
Yeah, I owned one.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I never drove it on the road.
I was just amazed by the dashboard mounted gear change. That was
amazing. Wonderful. You know the way it goes across the top? Well, it's because the gearbox is gearbox at the front. It seems to pass most of the way over the engine anyway, or well into the engine bay, and then it's just a standard shifter. It's just that the way that the linkage is means that by the time it comes through the dashboard, it's all a bit weird.
And Malcolm said that his one it was a later one, and it was a plusher one because it had dashboard, which a dashboard, if you can call a 12-inch square.
It's all relative, really, isn't it?
The dashboard, yeah. But that was interesting, and we did some photos for it, and it will be on a website in the summer at some point. So we'll do a little feature on that, so that'd be quite nice, because it's 70 years this year, the 2CV, so.
It is, yeah. 70 years of the Land Rover, 70 years of 2CV.
And 70 years of the Morris Minor, too, which is another anniversary. Uh-huh. 80 years of the Beetle. It's all happening this year.
It is. It really is. It's I suppose so. Yeah. Wow.
So yeah, that's the only other car aside from the Lexus and the Polo that I actually drive, so to speak. So
I drive loads of stuff. The other one that was really interesting, so I think it was a totally left field choice, was that I drove the DS7 Crossback.
Okay.
You know, the French SUV. Mm-hmm. And I've seen it's had a bit of... again, remember, I only had the equivalent of a teaspoonful of DS7 Crossback. And it was the super ultra prestige Opera.
Okay.
Diesel-y one. So, I know. Opera means you get a rotating BRM timepiece. It's not a clock when it's that expensive. It's a timepiece.
Was it the nice bronzy-coloured one? Or bronzy-goldy?
The bronzy-goldy-orangey one. Yeah. Mm. And it felt very French. I know you were talking about the 2CV just there, but amazingly, and the thing about that ultra prestige Opera one is that it has dynamic kind of dynamic ride and damping. So the camera on the front, I'm told, scans the road ahead and sort of decides whether or not it needs to stiffen or loosen the dampers. And at the start of the hill route, there's a series of kind of lateral ridges across half the road, which normally, if you're like us and you spend your day driving hot hatches, you really try and avoid like the plague.
Yes, on the left-hand side of the road.
On the left-hand side. So as a result, of course, thinking, meant to be French car, I aimed straight at them with that. And you know what? They pretty much disappeared. They were more heard than felt.
Okay.
Which I thought was pretty impressive. And I just left it in comfort mode and went around the hill route in comfort mode, which you would think would be a horrible, nasty mess of sort of body roll and right, two corners in, I've had enough of that rubbish, back to sport and normal. And it wasn't. It was great. It made a really nice job of just smoothing it all out. And it's quite expensive at that spec. You're getting on for 50 grand.
Okay.
And goodness knows what it's going to be worth after 2 weeks. But as an actual vehicle, if you take that, you know, aside from all the surrounding stuff, I was really quite impressed with it. I thought it was very French.
It's the first of the new brand, isn't it? So I guess.
Well, it is. And there were some announcements today by DS that they're stopping the DS5 and the DS4. Was that the one that nobody bought?
Might have to narrow it down a bit more. Well, that's in between the 3 and the 5, isn't it? So, yeah.
Well, yeah, the 4 is between the 5. Yeah. Sorry, I have to make fun of you for it, otherwise a listener will do it, because that's what happens.
Well, I was going to ask you about the interior, because from memory, the DS5 that I had a while ago now, the interior of that was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah,
because
interiors.
you had all the like aircraft toggle switches, and it was really, really good.
It wasn't as funky as that, but it was really, really nice. It's a kind of diamond theme that they've carried right through. It's a nice big screen in the middle. All the knobs and controls felt really good. That they were tactile. If they looked like they were made of metal, then certainly the main ones that you touched were made of metal.
And there are some physical buttons done all on the screen.
It's not all on the screen. There are physical buttons along the bottom of the screen to change mode of the screen and that kind of stuff too. The dashboard was, it was all the dashboard. The instrument binnacle was all one screen. It was completely virtual. So there were a number of different flavors you could choose from, or you could go custom and spend ages choosing exactly the right shades that you wanted and exactly the right layout that you wanted of the key controls. So it was super configurable, but then stuff like the stitching and the leather and everything was all very nice. If a little bit OTT in places, the watch strap pattern on the seats was a bit much and kind of was a but it was a bit footery, detail wise. But hey, I'm doing the traditional, if you drive a car, you have to have an interior niggle story there. So that's as close as I get to that, really. But I just thought that was really interesting. Probably one of the more, other than the Lexus and stuff that I've spoken about, probably one of the most interesting, but not in a technical way, cars that I drove all day. There were some others. I'll talk about them other times.
And you've mentioned, well, you've mentioned here, and I saw them, but you saw one close up. The Rolls-Royce Cullinan was there were well, there was a group or a gaggle, I suppose,
Yeah,
or whatever you call them.
because there's a bunch of stuff that's there for people who don't know. There's a bunch of stuff that's there, which is actually out on the test tracks. So you're not allowed to take pictures of those. You can only take pictures in certain spots, which is why you always see pictures from sort of top of the hill and stuff.
Did you see the
And
eye piece that was there all day?
the two of them. No, that's not the one that was
Oh,
really trolling. The one that was really trolling was the Lincoln Co. 01, the fleet of
oh
three
yes,
of them.
I see. Yes, silver one. Yes.
Yes. Well, no, there were two white ones and a blue one. So that, yeah, I swear that they do it on purpose, though. They must do
Yes,
it. The day that
possibly.
they know everyone's there, it's like, come on, let's go around because they know they can't take pictures of it. You know they can't talk about anything in detail. But yeah. Again, another vehicle looks really good in the flesh. The 01. It looks much better in the flesh than it does in pictures. It's like the Lexus.
Yes.
And more than one person said that because, of course, we all ended up discussing them amongst ourselves. But one vehicle there was a load of, completely undisguised, was the Cullinan. And of course, we
And of
couldn't do
course.
anything about it. You couldn't stop and go up and look at them or anything like that. You could just see them every time you went around the hill route.
Yes. But well, from even when driving past them, they looked huge. But you were fortunate that one came into the steering pad.
So one came into the steering pad, which is where everyone's based, which is where you're definitely allowed to take photos and stuff. So of course it came in, it stopped. The driver got out to go speak to some friends, and they will have known that this was going to happen. And of course, then it got mobbed because they left the windows down and everything, so you could see right into the interior. And I wasn't close up. I was in the middle of trying out a Jaguar E-Pace, to be perfectly honest. And yeah, I mean, it didn't do it any favors in the spec that that one's in because it was a pre-production prototype, clearly. It was flat black with the small wheel, the smallest wheels in black as well, with the kind of dull black interior. So it was all, and it had clearly done some miles. Okay. It had obviously been used for all the testing. So it was a bit grubby, not really a desirable spec at all, or a representational spec. So it made an already what you thought was going to be a big car and turned out to be an absolutely massive car. Just look bigger and more ungainly than it might have done. But it's big. Either way, no matter what color scheme you have, what finish you have in it, it's big. It's got to be a good couple of feet longer than a Range Rover.
Yes, I'd say so.
And wider and taller and just, you know, you see a normal Phantom and a normal
Squarer.
But yeah, it's just big. And of course, it's not really meant for the UK market. You know, it's meant for, I heard someone, what was it, someone say Russia and East, which I thought was a pretty fair description.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's big. That's the overwhelming thing about it, is it's big. I think, and having seen some of the others that were sitting around, very spec dependent.
Yeah, but from memory, I saw there were a couple of white ones there, a couple of dark red or burgundy ones.
Yeah, and there was a metallic sand one as well, which, you know, we'll work a treat, I'm sure, on the west coast of the US. Didn't look quite the same on a sort of overcast Bedfordshire. Excuse me.
Oh gosh. Ding.
Thank you. Yes. On an overcast, Bedfordshire morning, it didn't look quite so awesome. But yeah, just worth mentioning because it's such a vehicle of so much interest to so many folk.
Should have called it the Rolls-Royce Biggin. Anyway, there you go.
The what? Oh, the
Rolls-Royce Biggin.
Yeah, unless they want to do a long wheelbase.
Well, yes,
I'd almost put money on their doing a long wheelbase, because if they don't, someone else will.
Anyway. Or someone.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Anyway, should we move on?
Yes.
Lots of yakking and navel-gazing there. I picked out a lunchtime read, and it was only a fluke that I noticed it was yours.
I say it looks very familiar.
Yes, that's what you said earlier on. And it's purely because I have, you know how I have that regular listeners will know that when there's a list of the week, I have a real grumble about any worst of list. For a start, any worst of list. And secondly, any worst of list, which begins with the Austin Allegro. And you've written a piece for Influx, all about the Allegro.
Yeah, and it's funny how it came about, because it's a friend of ours, a friend of a friend, and he has this garages of BL cars, and the Allegro he's had for quite a few years, and it was one of these cars that was found. Well, the Allegro is 45 years old this year. It was 45 years old last week, or the week before. It was the 17th of May.
Yeah.
So it's almost as old as me. It's one of those cars that did genuinely sit in a garage for 20 years, didn't get driven. He more or less saved it when the lady who he knew was going to do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got 23,000 miles on. It's 1976. So it's 42 years old. And it is just spotless.
Did you feel bad sitting in it and driving it?
Yes. I did actually mention in the article that you felt bad putting your feet on the rubber mats because you were fighting that you're going to get grass on them or dirt on them. It's one of those nice articles that happened within a week of me pitching it, taking the pictures, writing it. It was online.
Oh, wow. That
was a really nice thing to happen, because we did the photos on a Friday evening, not last Friday, the Friday before,
mm-hmm.
Because the car was accessible. And I mean, he does use it a lot for shows.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing that it would have been all right to use and ready to go. But it was just amazing. And I've never driven one, and I didn't on that night, a passenger, but it was, you get the sense that obviously there was nothing to compare it to. And we saw him Sunday, and I did say this to him, there's nothing to compare it to in terms of rivals on that particular occasion.
Mm-hmm.
But the build quality felt fine. The rear passenger space was huge.
Really?
Really, really huge.
I'm really surprised that you're saying that. Okay.
I mean, my other half is, what, 5'10", 5'11"?
Yeah, it's quite tall.
And it felt like it was quite quite low in the back, like really sitting really low. And he said it was the most comfortable back seat he sat in for a long time.
If only it had been a Van Den Plan, he'd had the little picnic as well.
But, well, I mean, but you probably wouldn't have got that glorious regal blue interior, which was everything apart from the floors covered in blue plastic. It was just
it does incredible. Look, yeah, it's a kind of, well, the pictures show it as a kind of indigo blue, so it's it's
kind of really really bright. Well, yeah, kind of, yeah, it's lighter than that.
It's blue.
It's, yeah, very blue. And it's just, it was just a lovely lovely car. And he's also got he's got two Metros. Yes, a blue one and a red one. The blue one was at the NEC Classic Car Show last November.
Mm-hmm. I probably saw it.
On the Maguire stand. That's a Concours winner. This Allegro is quite high up there as well. He's also got a Morris Minor, which is very similar condition. And we're going to do something on that too, because the standard of the cars is just amazing. I mean, that Allegro, the first picture on the website,
mm-hmm.
where I've got down quite low and you can see under the wheel arches.
Yeah.
Those wheel arches have not been repainted. That is how they are, how they've been from new. And even the Metro that he's got is the same. You look underneath it and all the bolts are, they haven't got a speck of dirt on them.
I mean, I'm in awe of people like that.
Well, he is one of these people who will not, who, if there's danger of rain, he's a bit, I mean, arguing about whether to take it out, certainly the Metro. And that's much newer. But you can see in the condition of his cars that they are just fantastic. And he will get home and he'll clean them until before he puts them away.
What does he drive as his daily driver?
He's got a 2005. Vauxhall Corsa.
Yeah, you see.
Well, I know. Which the jokey thing is...
Is it a complete tip?
No.
Oh, that's no.
More or less...
I wanted one of them to be gross.
No, it's more or less as good a condition, but it's also always referred to as not a show car. And ironically, this summer is going to be at some Vauxhall event in a show lineup. Because we said on Sunday, but it's not a show car, but it will be in a show this summer. So he couldn't resist. But again, that's another low mileage car that he found somewhere.
I think some people can just sniff them out.
Yeah, yeah. But that weekend, he went to the Allegro's 45th birthday party thing at Gaydon, and they had Harris Mann there who cut the birthday cake, and it was all... Yeah. All proper stuff.
That looks good fun. No, yeah. It's an awesome article. I really enjoyed reading it.
Thank you.
It's a good one. So, yeah, that's your lunchtime read this week, folks. Definitely a lunchtime read. Which brings us to the and finally this week.
Yes. I'm just going to open the link. The Lakeland Motor Museum has been crowned Britain's best classic destination.
Yeah.
I've never been.
Well, me neither. I've seen loads of signs for it. But it's... Yeah.
I don't get up there very often, so...
Well, you get a nosebleed if you go that far north, don't you?
Yeah, I'm not that far south, but yeah. I get nosebleeds anyway, so yeah. Why not do it up there as well? But yeah, it came on top of a 30-strong long list. Yeah, so it was... That's quite a good achievement, and it's voted for by readers of Practical Classics.
Yeah, it's awesome. I've heard it's great. They've got loads of stuff from right across the automotive spectrum. I think there are some land speed record winners in there.
Okay,
there's fire engines, there's all sorts of stuff up there. Mm-hmm. I've not been. I really should at some point.
I haven't really been to that many of the. I've been to the Haynes one, and I've been to. We did Coventry last year at MotoFest, but I've not done Bewley. I've not done.
Well, I only did Bewley in March.
Okay.
So my best mate took me for my birthday because he couldn't believe I'd never been. Okay. So I went to Bewley in the snow, which I think is rare enough, to be honest. Which is cool. It's well worth it. I'd recommend Bewley. Don't go on the little monorail in the driving snow, because it's a really, really cold way to do it. And we would have been warmer just walking. But it seemed like a really cool idea, because it's a monorail and it goes through the building. What's not to like? Apologies, gone way off on a tangent as usual there, but well done to the Lakeland Motor Museum.
Good stuff.
That pretty much brings us to the end this week. Not really any parish notes. His Andrewness is on holiday. We don't have a special lined up. I'll try and see if I can get a 150 out to take up at least 2.5 minutes of your time before the end of the week, although I might be pushing it given it's Tuesday already. I'll see how we get on. Andrew's back next week. Commiserations. You can't have everything. So I've just noticed this. He's written that himself. Okay.
Is he?
Yeah.
That's all you can say it then.
Yeah, I can. Yeah. So commiserations, everyone. He's back next week. Hopefully there'll be a rear view. He'd been let down a couple of times lately. That's why there wasn't one last week. So
I'm so behind with those. It's quite good there's no new ones, because I'm so behind with
those. That's one of the reasons we've gone to every fortnight. Because people had trouble keeping up and ended up with too much of a backlog. So in order to make it more consistent and to lessen the pressure on everyone, including the listeners, then we did that. But if you're desperate for something to listen to, go back, listen to one of the rear views that you maybe haven't caught from before you joined and you started listening. There's some great ones back there. There's Rich for a start. There's who else can I think of off the top of my head? It's just lots of really good people. Robin Hales from Hyundai is a really interesting
Alex
one.
Alex Boy, Khan.
Nia Khan right back at the very start there.
Yeah.
Liam Bird.
Writer
there.
Yep.
And if you're looking for someone you're more familiar with than someone like Rich Brunning from a few weeks ago as well. It's absolutely fantastic talking about Project Binky and being a race driver and engineer.
I also enjoyed most recent one I heard. I enjoyed Carlton Boyce as well.
Oh, Carlton's is excellent. Have you heard James Cameron yet? Have you got that far?
No.
James Cameron, tank slider from Mission Motorsport. Yeah, have a hanky handy. That's all I'm going to say on that one. That's the one that definitely gets dusty in the car every time. It's terrible.
Okay.
on which happy note, let's finish up. And don't forget that between now and next week, you can give us any feedback. Share your thoughts with the show at Motoring Podcast on Twitter and Instagram, on Facebook, and on the contact page of motoringpodcast.com. Which is the hub of all our activities. Please don't forget about Patreon. It's a great way to support us if you can. If not, then please don't forget to leave a rating and a review, not just for this show, but for Rearview as well. Rich, how can people follow if people really want to find out about I'm sorry, that sounds so condescending. That's terrible. If people want to find out about Morris Miners, all sorts of stuff, other things you're writing about, what's the best way that they can follow and keep in touch with you?
Twitter is probably the easiest way, and it's at richgoodingcom. I always tend to get that wrong. That's the best way. If you look on there, there's my website address and my email address. So I'm actually going to enter the world of freelance from next Monday. So any work writing about cars, fleet cars, electric cars, design work, because I'm also a designer as well, so our publications. So yeah.
Yep. Cool. So make sure you do that, folks. If you want to get in touch with me, then I can be found. Best way to get in touch with me, really, is Twitter, where I'm at AJP Bradley, B-R-A-D-L-E-Y. Andrew, we'll be back next week. But until then, I've been Alan Bradley.
I've been Richard Gooding.
And safe motoring.